This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
There were 3 million paving blocks in 1911. Today, only a yard of brick remains. The 2.5-mile path is surrounded by steel and concrete, silent sentries to the history made here. It is a legacy of speed. Between these walls, the risks are great. Emotions come from both ends of the spectrum. The Indianapolis 500-mile race is quite simply a spectacle, a celebration of technology and humanity. Today, it celebrates the diamond anniversary running. It was no different when the track was first planned. The first 500 was the spectacle of its day. The giant track beckoned the best of the age, and 80,000 fans, many arriving by horse and buggy. Ray Haroon won the first challenge. Since then, the lineage has raced on. Men who share a special look, the brotherhood of the best. Down the years, they have sought a common goal, victory in the Indianapolis 500. Danger has always been a passenger. Like the track and the speed, it is a constant, ever present. It too is a part of the lure. Without that risk, the men are just ordinary. In a flash, a skilled drive transforms to disaster. Now the heroes of this age wait. They weigh the odds, consider the risks, and they pray the dream today will be theirs. As much changes over 75 races, much stays the same. Skilled hands still lovingly caress and coax the ultimate performance. Jules Gou drank 6 bottles of champagne on his road to victory. Today, it's a frosty bottle of milk that awaits the eventual winner. That and so much more. The Yard of Bricks have witnessed the high-speed passage of history. In just a few hours, 500 miles from now, a 75th story will have been written. A new likeness will be added to a timeless silver cup. And a new name will sit atop the lineage of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500.
We can now officially declare it race weekend in Indianapolis. Carb Day is coming up tomorrow. We are 3 days away from the 101st Indianapolis 500, or I guess you could say it's 4 if you include today. But much of today is already gone, so we're ready to go this weekend. Thanks for joining us tonight on Trackside with Kirk Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. David Deering is back in our studio. No better way to get geared up for the weekend with one of the classic Delta Force intros, that from the ABC broadcast featuring Paul Page from 1991. And here we go with all of the things that we think you might need to know. Yeah, you may already know that, so we're going to get into some bold predictions here in our first segment. And I may find some of my compatriots from NBC. We might even bump into somebody from ABC for the broadcast coming up this weekend. NBC has the Carb Day coverage tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. I'll be hosting from 11 a.m. until 3:30. We'll have the final practice and then also the Indy Lights telecast, which is fascinating. Coming up at about 12:30, Paul Tracy and Townsend Bell will be in the booth with me for the first hour plus, and then Anders Krohn will join me at 12:30, and then we'll have the pit stop competition after that as well. Jan Bikas and Katie Hargett and Marty Snyder will be on pit road, and then Marty is moving up to the victory podium for the special NBC Motorsports special of NASCAR America from 3:30 until 5 with several cut-ins and segments with Townsend and Marty here at IMS. Also, our F1 crew is in Monaco. Lee Diffie and David Hobbs and Steve Matchett and Will Buxton are there. And then, obviously, the NASCAR weekend in Charlotte as well. So I assume that's Rick Allen and the crew will be in Charlotte heading up that coverage as well. By the way, before I forget, I meant to mention this last night. If you do want to watch Monaco, it's difficult in the Indianapolis area. So here is what you can do, because it's on NBC on Channel 13, but they're going to have their 500 pre-race coverage on Sunday morning. So as far as I know, it doesn't air on a main channel. It probably airs on their digital channel 13.2 or something like that. But I'll be honest, I have no idea how to get that, and I'm pretty sure it's not available for something like DirecTV. It might be available through Comcast or something else. But here's what you can also do, is it will re-air on NBCSN. I forget the time. I think like at 11 a.m., but just avoid spoilers and you can record it there. And be warned that around the country, the Monaco race airs on NBC and then they have the post-race show on NBCSN. And every year we get complaints from people that they were spoiled. by watching the post-race show first. It leads right in to the re-air of Monaco on NBCSN. But set your DVRs, and then also make sure you set your DVR for the 500 as well. Your season pass doesn't automatically work. I noticed that mine was not set to record on Sunday night, so you need to manually set that to record on Channel 6 here in Indianapolis or possibly on ABC around the country. So there's your television programming, public service announcement going on there now. All right, Kurt, let's get into it. What we think might happen this year in the race. I have bailed out, and I have listed just about everybody on my tiers. I've essentially knocked it down to two. Do you want me to go first, or are you ready to lead things off?
Well, let me give you an overview. So I broke this down. It was kind of like, by the way, like it was fantasy draft night in the NFL. I really think there are 18 cars that can win the race. How's that for balance?
Well, that's pretty close to what I have.
And that's leaving out probably a couple that wouldn't be that big of a surprise if they won the race. I have, and this, I'm just giving you an overview, and we can talk about specifics in a moment. I think there are 10 cars that fit tier one. 10 guys that, boy, if I had to put money on them, I absolutely would. Tier two, which are guys that I won't be surprised if they win the race. They're certainly capable. There's three of those. And then there are five others that I think, I could see the scenario where they could win the race. So let's talk about the 10. And most of them, I don't think you'd be surprised by. That's Dixon. That's Kanaan. Marco, Will Power, Ryan Hutter-Reay, Montoya, Castroneves, Newgarden, and Pagano. So the 10 include all five of the Penske's. Two of the Andretti's, and both Ganassi's that you would think of at the top.
Okay.
That's nine.
All right.
And I have Alonso in there. I think Alonso can win this race.
Okay.
And increasingly, I'm not going to be surprised if he does. So, and by the way, he told me yesterday during the media tour, I made the joke about him wanting the actual BorgWarner trophy. He said, I'm going to make a replica. I'm going to make one.
Well, he makes $40 million a year.
Yeah, I know.
So he can get that done.
Yeah. So
he doesn't just have $40 million.
He wasn't bragging.
He makes that per year.
He wasn't bragging. He just said, as a fact, I'm going to make a replica trophy.
Sure.
I was like, okay. I want to come see it. He said, I've done that with my two Formula One championship trophies. I'm going to make one of those. I was like, okay. So there are 10 drivers that fit that. Is there anyone that, aside from the five Penske's, the two Andretti's, or actually three Andretti's, and two Ganassi's, that you would put in that first tier?
Well, here's how I'm going to do it. And normally, I'm the opposite with a huge list of my tier ones. I am going to be a little bolder and call it tier one and then tier 1A. So 1A includes the same definition as what you have, and it's very similar. But I'm going to separate two that I think have a better chance in my mind, or just a bold prediction.
Okay.
It's Scott Dixon and Ryan Hunter-Reay. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay,
he's going to be really good.
Is going to be really good. You know, and the pole sitter hasn't won since, 2009, I think. But those are numbers, and those can change. And Dixon won it the year before from the pole.
Did Elio win from the pole? I guess he did, yes.
Elio did in 2009, his third one
from
the pole. You
know, it's funny for this discussion that I would put all five Penske's in there given how they qualified. But I just think they're all – you know, it isn't just –
I still have them in there, too.
It's just –
In the 1A.
It's not just the fact that – they have the reputation, and they are for Team Penske, but their crews are really solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at some of the other guys that'll be in the second, third tiers, and you just, no disrespect, because I mean this with all my heart, there are some good crews out there. I just don't know if in the moment, if non-Penske, non-Ganassi, non-Andretti crews can win the race.
They are more likely to have a mishap in six, seven, eight pit stops than the others.
Not even a misstep, but on that last pit stop, are they losing a half a second?
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
A half a second costs you three positions.
Well, the top teams have their choice of crew people. Not always. There are some guys that say, you know what, I like this environment. I like the stability. I like the people I work for. I'm going to decline. But more often than not, when Team Penske calls and offers you a job,
sure.
Now, that may be a little bit different. Maybe somebody doesn't want to move to Charlotte. So they may not get everybody in that regard, but
largely, they have the better crews.
Yeah, and Andretti and Ganassi, those are Indianapolis teams.
So. Does anybody fit in your 1A?
That you didn't mention? You know who I'm putting in there? I'm going to put Ed Carpenter in that list this year. So what I have is I have the two in my Super 1 category, and then I have nine more. So ultimately, I have 11 in that group. Did you include Rossi? I don't think you did. I'm including him because I just think that's a huge advantage to be able to start up front. If we look at last year's race, now, obviously, things change because Bell and Hunter Ray made contact in the pit lane, but those two guys in Hinch and Newgarden ran up front all day, and had we not gotten into fuel savings and Munoz was within range too, one of those was going to win. It wasn't going to be Rossi's, so I just think that's a huge advantage. As much as we talk about in, five of the last 6 years, the winner has started outside of the top 10, stay out of trouble early on. You can save some fuel. They'll take turns leading just to see if they can. They'll drop back and forth. I think he learned a lot last year. I think he can win the race. So
I add
Ed and Rossi to that mix, along with Kanaan and Marco and Power and Montoya and Elio and Newgarden and Simon Pagenaud. So I like you have all five Penske's. The difference is I have Alonso atop my second tier. I hear you, and it won't surprise me if he wins, but I'm just going to separate a little bit based on the lack of experience. Maybe I'm being naive, but I still think it's going to be very challenging to win a straight-out fight that's not in unique circumstances for someone that's never done this race before.
Yep.
All that said, it won't surprise me at all.
Well, I put in my second tier, I put Carpenter, Rossi, and Graham Rahal, because I think all three of those guys are what would be capable. Their crews are capable. So really, I probably have 13 in what I would call the 1. I think there are 13 of them that absolutely can win the race.
Yeah, and I should probably separate Alonso. What I have originally written, I just put a big second group. My third group, I think, are long shots. But in my second group, I have Alonso atop that list, then Hildebrand, then Rahal, then Hinchcliffe, then Sage Karam, because he's going to be bold.
Boy, you're right.
He's quick. And I think this year Sage Karam is going to get to, unless something else befalls him out of his control, I think he's going to get to lap 150 or 160. And then after that, he's trying to go to the front. I know he wants to finish this race, but if he's running in the top five at the end of the race, all bets are off. So I would include him and Takuma Sato because the car is so good. Same thing I just said for Sage Karam. We know Sato is going for it. He's gone for it before. And then in my third tier, I include these are guys that I think could win it. Charlie Kimball, Carlos Munoz, and Oriol Servia. I would put Munoz up much higher, but no offense. It just would be a big surprise considering the way it's gone so far this month for AJ Foyt Racing, adjusting to the new Chevy Aero kit. They have not had the pace. It would be a big upset for them to be able to win. I put him in as someone that can because of how highly I regard Oriol Servia, of how I know he's only won one IndyCar race in his life, but he is so smart, and I think he's really talented. It's a one-off situation, but that's one of the long shots. And I should probably put Charlie Kimball a little higher than that, too. The guy's finished third and fifth and has won an IndyCar race before and is with a good team. So Kimball is another one that can win the race. Anything outside of the people that I mentioned, I would be very, very surprised if they win the race.
So I was trying to see how many you had.
I have a total of 20 listed.
Okay. So I'll take a couple of those out. I don't see Kimball, Munoz, or Servia winning the race. But the three that I the other five, I said there were three tiers. The 10 I named, the three extras being Carpenter, Rossi, and Graham Rahal. The last five, and I say the last five in the group that I think can win the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday, those would include Ed Carpenter, Takuma Sato, J.R. Hildebrand, James Hinchcliffe. I said five. There's really four because I double counted. And Ed Jones. I think Ed Jones is going to have a really interesting race. I don't think he can win it.
Yeah.
But
he's the highest qualifying Dale Coyne driver ever. I wish I could credit who I saw that from, who looked that up, but Justin Wilson had qualified 14th a couple of times, Ed qualified 11th, right?
Yeah.
Ed qualified 11th. In 27 years of entering cars at the Indianapolis 500, he has the highest qualifying 500 entry for Dale Coyne Racing. Ed Jones is good.
Yes, he is.
Ed Jones is good. He might join. I haven't seen this confirmed or not. He might join us in the booth for the lights race tomorrow along with me and Andrew. So I like Ed. He's kind of starting to come out of his shell a little bit. He's gaining a little bit more confidence. He's got a good personality. So, and he's good. He's a good race car driver. So we'll see.
That's you know, I mean, it goes without saying, we'd all like to have Sebastian Bourdais in this race, but I'm speaking more from the team standpoint. Man, I wish Sebastian was in this for this team and they had their car back, because I think that would be a car we would put at a minimum in the second group.
High in the second group.
He'd probably be in your 10, 11, 12 bracket, and what a great thing for the team and for Sebastian, neither of which have had a signature moment at this racetrack.
By the way, you know, when we were talking about that car and who might be a possible replacement moving on beyond someone, I neglected to mention, and who wrote this? I think David Malsher put this at motorsport.com. Don't forget about R.C. Enerson, who drove for Coyne at the end of last season in a few races and impressed some people. And we talked to RC a few weeks ago, and they'd had some conversations about partnering up for some races this year. And he told us he was still looking for a chance to do some races this year. So especially if they mix and match like they've done in the past, I would expect that you would see RC in that Coyne car. That now, not only is it an opportunity to get on the grid, but again, with Craig Hampson as the engineer, with Honda looking good, especially on street courses and the ovals, that might be something you see along with Matty Brabham, Steph Wilson, James Davison. Those are Tristan Vodia. Those are all possibilities that we could see in the number 18 car moving forward. All right, we've got more to come as we get you set for Indianapolis 500 weekend. Of course, the Carbonite Burger Bash presented by Steak and Shake tomorrow night at Pan Am Plaza. Much more to come from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Eddie Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway as we continue to get set for the 101st Indianapolis 500 coming up on Sunday afternoon right here on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. ABC Television has the coverage around the country live. It will be tape delayed here in the Indianapolis area and air on RTV6 starting at 7 o'clock. Okay, let's talk about Media Day today. A final chance to spend, well, it's not the final chance. They'll still be talking leading up to the race. But this is the last long media session, I think, and it's just a fantastic opportunity kind of based on what the Super Bowl does of everybody having a table and everyone getting a chance to visit somewhat casually and get some one-on-ones and some group interviews. I guess I'll start with one of the things that I learned, and I want to know, you know, you're in a different role this year, so you may not have been listening quite as much as I was, but I know you were lurking about. So this was interesting from Simon Pagenaud. I think that's one of the questions that we all have coming in. Might the Chevys have a little more, even if they're not as fast in a straight line? Is there something else that might lead us to think that Chevy has just as good of a chance as Honda? Also got confirmation that, well, the Hondas will have their new engines in for the first time tomorrow. I know at least some of the Chevys, including Pagenaud, had their engine in on Monday for that practice, and Pagenaud said that he thought the new engine was a really good update. We wondered if they might have something. You know, it's obviously not hugely different. We didn't notice anything specifically, but it's always tough to tell.
But he ran better
from the times, and he said he was much better. He said his car is good in traffic. He thinks what they might have is that it's really good in the corners. Likes how the thing goes in the corners. You can be aggressive through there as well. He said, you know, we're still lacking as far as straightaway speed. But this was interesting. I remember hearing last year that one of the advantages the Honda had is that it created a lot of dirty air behind for the trailing car. Simon said that the turbulence behind the Hondas is really good, that that's not a problem, but he said the problem is that it is hard to draft, that it's a little bit hard to get up to them, but it's not creating dirty air, and they're just dealing. And he said it might just be the fact that the Hondas are faster in the straightaway.
Yeah,
so that's the challenge.
That's what I take from that, is that while there might not be dirty air, they just can't get up there to make that pass.
And another thing I got was, and that's kind of alluding to the passing, James Hinchcliffe told me He thinks it's going to be harder to pass this year. You can get up there, but it's tougher to get around. So while in the last few years it kind of seemed like you could choose when you wanted to take the lead or not, he thinks passes are going to be a little tougher to come by. They're going to mean a little bit more. This was late in the session, so I didn't ask a lot of people about that. I asked Marco Andretti if he agreed. He said, no, I think you're going to be able to pass. I think it's going to be very difficult for the leader to stay in the lead. He's not going to choose to give up the lead. He's just going to give up the lead in the draft.
I think that's the message that I heard. It's more of that. I appreciate what Hinch said. If you've paraphrased him well, I'm sure you have. But I don't agree with that sentiment based on what other drivers have told me. But maybe they're just optimistic too. So we'll see.
And it's a relative term. I think he still is. He's not saying that it's going to be like it was 10 years ago, where you didn't see a lot of passes on track for the lead. But there may not be 68
right.
this time around.
I'm not sure we necessarily want 68.
No, I'm not. I would not be disappointed if it is a little harder to pass. Now, as I've said before, I'm fine with the way it's been because, especially for people that are just tuning in for the first time, it's just wild and it's fun
right.
and it's entertaining. And even if you do choose to give up the lead, I like the strategy involved in that. You need to save some fuel, so you don't want to lead the whole time. But when you're in front, fewer things can go wrong. And Marco was talking about, my grandfather just says lead, lead, lead. That would be his philosophy. Lead as much as you can. And then he said, I think, though, you probably do have to drop back when it is time to save fuel now and again. And then obviously, too, everyone is thinking about, and I spent probably more time talking with Marco about, when we talk strategy, we're normally talking about fuel saving and when you do pit stops. But to me, for this race now, strategy is how you're managing when you pass, and especially towards the end of the race, where you want to be. And kind of the feeling is, on the last lap, you'd kind of like to be second. You'd like to be second going into turn three on the last lap. But he said the conundrum is that what if there's a yellow?
Yeah.
Once you get into the final I don't know what it is. Probably five laps?
Right, probably five.
Yeah, have you heard anything of – have they said anything as far as we would red flag the thing and try to get a green under this circumstance? Has that come up yet?
It has not. I know it came up last year and there was some points made, but I've not heard that. They certainly haven't had it in a driver's meeting yet.
I think that would be something to think about, though, that it's possible, and it's always going to depend on the circumstance, and, it depends on if we're delayed because of weather and the window for TV is getting a little bit smaller, but it's something to keep in mind, and it adds into the things that the strategists and the teams have to consider for that as well. But we do know this, when you get into the final few laps of the race, if it goes yellow, just count on that being the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you get inside at least the final three, you just don't have time to red flag it, do a pace lap, and get back up to speed. So that's why being in second is a little bit of a gamble if you do have the chance to get to the front.
That's why 2013 is such a good case study for this. Mm-hmm. Kanaan got the lead going into turn one. He was going to lead, it appeared, through turn two, but all bets were off as he headed down the backstretch, but he didn't get that far. He was in turn two when Frank Keady crashed behind him. And that ended the race. So you're right. You cannot sit there and say, I'm going to make a Hornish pass on Marco Andretti coming to the checkered flag, because the odds are there's going to be something happen behind you because people are taking chances.
Here's the other thing that the Chevy drivers were telling me is that they're really hoping that it's hot. And unfortunately,
yes.
It doesn't look like it's going to be hot, but plus 80 degrees. Will Power said, I'd really like it to be about 85 to 90 and sunny. Well, we're not going to get that, we don't think. They're normally pretty good about temperature. It seems more likely to be 78 and overcast. There's a chance of rain throughout the day, so I only say probably because you never know, but that's something that they think their car is a little more adjustable and can deal with the heat a little bit better. So anything else you listened in on today that you found interesting?
No, a lot. I mean, there was a lot of just conversation about the race and strategy, and I still like what Alexander Rossi had to say the other day, and I talked about this, I think, last night, was just that, there is no strategy here. You're trying to at least get through the first half of the race and then try to set yourself up for the back half of the race, but the idea that you can plan this going in won't happen.
interesting session. It was a good session and just a good chance for the media to be able to get some things done that they want to get done. So we'll get into some other things. Great news that came out yesterday about Sebastian Bourdais and more news on that front that came out today and plenty of other items to go as we roll on Trackside from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, tomorrow night we'll be downtown at this time at Pan Am Plaza for the Carb Night Burger Bash. A lot of questions coming in today via Twitter, Kurt. What is the plan if there is weather? Forecast looks pretty good throughout the day, but it is not as good in the evening.
Well, that's not good. Don't spread that weather news.
I know it. Got to be accurate. So if it does rain, we continue, correct?
Yeah, we're going to continue. We obviously wouldn't if it'd be lightning. And we can take breaks. Look, we got all night, so we'll do the radio show as best we can. And
yeah, that's going to be a challenge. I guess we can guarantee something is going to happen because we have 2 hours of radio time that we are charged with filling tomorrow night. So
yeah, I don't think they could just run maybe they better queue up an old race.
Get 560 ready. Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't thought about that. You know, it is. I don't think we've ever really even had a cloud on the Burger Bash. Last year was a little bit dicey in the middle of the day.
Didn't it rain a little bit the first year when we were at the Plainfield location?
That's right.
It wasn't terrible, but you had a tent prepared.
It was a cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
We've had rain. Very lucky, and I am expecting it to be very good tomorrow throughout the day and continue in the evening. And then if it wants to do a little bit overnight, that's fine. It was good that it rained, in my mind, yesterday and this morning. We got that out of the way.
That's right.
Let's get it all out of the way. They should be...
So come prepared for IndyCar drivers to show up. Several have either reached out to me today or texted me and said they were coming. I'm never really sure who shows up. That's why I don't announce.
Mm-hmm.
The first year we surprised everybody by having the pole sitter, Scott Dixon, come. He's been one of our regulars.
And it went pretty well for him that month.
Yeah. Tony Kanaan's been
won the race.
Pretty frequent. Pippa Mann, always a regular. She's very giving of her time and energy, and I really think this is good stuff for the event. We talked a little bit about it, but the American Idol champion is going to perform Trent Harmon at 9 o'clock, and let's hope that the weather's good for that because I think you're going to like Trent from what I know of him so far.
I like the song I've heard.
You like the stuff, and you know he had a lot of cover stuff in his run up through the American Idol series. Does a lot of things really well. He has a tremendous voice. I've been amazed. I'm not exactly a music critic, but in terms of voice power, versatility, very good voice.
Okay, back to some news. I didn't have a chance to get into this.
And it's free, by the way. Event is free. So if you're in the downtown area, come downtown. It's free. Milkshakes and steak burgers and fries. So from Steak and Shake.
I saw this yesterday after we had finished with the show, but I was so pleased to see the picture that Sebastian Bourdais posted of himself leaving the hospital upright. He's on crutches, but the fact that he's able to be on crutches after a broken pelvis and a broken hip and surgery to repair both and a statement released today that was very optimistic, and he's not ruling out coming back by the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's all just tremendous. Can't emphasize enough the safety elements that have been put in place over the last 20 years, really, and just his spirit. What a good race car driver he is. What's unfortunate for a lot of reasons, obviously, but what adds to it is this has been such a difficult track for him over the years. He's had a couple decent runs, but never really been in contention. Well, this was his chance. He was really going to have a car, I think, that could contend. And same for the team, Dale Coyne Racing, never had a shot like that. Obviously, Justin Wilson ran well for him. But, you know, just this was going to be the things were lining up for both parties. And you hate to see a chance like that. You don't get many chances at this venue to really make history. And they certainly look like they could.
Maybe one of the reasons I like Sebastian so much is that he just seems – race car drivers are in some ways supermen, and you know they're astronauts. They're it's amazing what they do, and Sebastian is certainly in that category as well. But he's so unassuming. He's just I'm sure no one would, when they see him, would ever suspect that he's a race car driver. Maybe that's one of the things I like about Ed Carpenter too. And you know, both of those guys are remarkably fit, like all the other drivers too. But
they're pretty normal.
Ed is just such a low key guy. Sebastian is the same way. He's a family guy. You know, he drives the motorhome around all summer with the family, and they go to different places, and you know, and make vacations out of it. And yeah, and in reality, race car drivers are a little more normal than most athletes. They're a little better grounded, and I think it comes from how hard they've all had to work coming up. And
well,
you know, it takes
it
more than just talent. You've got to have people helping you along the way. So I think they've all learned pretty good people skills.
But I would jump in there and say that not everyone likes Sebastian Bourdais early in his career, and I think there's a maturity that comes, and the two guys you're talking about in particular are older now, they're fathers now, and a lot of times we don't see these athletes because they move past their athletic prime, and then before they become fathers. You know, this sport, you're able to move into your 30s and 40s and still be competitive, and those that have children, it does change them, and it I mean, Sebastian wasn't always as liked in the paddock as he is now. So,
no, I don't imagine. I don't know that, and I wasn't.
I know that.
I wasn't covering him, other than, you know, he would come in studio once a year after he won the championship when we talked to him. But I wasn't covering Carter Champ Car on any kind of regular basis. But I will trust what you say on that front. You know, and from the kid perspective, Jay Howard, I was listening in when he was being asked if, you know, he is now a father. He was not the last time. And were you worried that would change you as a driver? And he said, yeah, I actually was worried. And then I got out there. No, I'm still the same.
No,
I'm
still
willing
to
get after it. And that's not an issue. So
I think they still have it. But it's a case of, you know, just the maturity that comes with the sport and fatherhood and parenthood in general. So, you know. Good for Seb. I really hope he comes back this season, just that he gets to come back at all after that crash.
A couple of F1 notes, and people will get a chuckle out of this, just the headline. And Adam Stern of Sports Business Journal had this one. Formula One has named an executive from the Boston Consulting Group as their head of digital strategy.
Good.
So I'm sure the IndyCar people will take note of that. Frank Arthofer is his name. And this was interesting what Zach Brown said yesterday in his conference call. The McLaren executive director says he'd like to see F1 return to Indianapolis. I threw that out there a few months ago when, you know, we hear F1 would like to improve their footprint in America. They would like more races in America.
Yeah.
It's awfully expensive to build a street course. And that's the thing that I mentioned, that if you really want to be in America, this would make the most sense. And that's what Zach said. It's a ready-made track. It's the racing capital of the world.
It's a good track, too.
Yes, it is. From that standpoint, yeah, the course itself is much better than when Formula One raced here the last time. And as Doug Bowles said, we all know it's going to come down to economics. Just if they're asking for the same amount of money in a sanctioning fee as they were the last time, then it's probably not going to happen. But if they, Formula One and Liberty, feel like it is important to be in America, then let's talk and see what kind of deal can be made. Still reading more things about Long Beach. The story I saw the other day said that they're going to decide by June or July whether it's going to be Formula One or IndyCar, and they're paying whatever it is, $150,000, $200,000 to a consulting group. And I really wish they would have paid us $250 a piece, and we could have done that research for them and told them. Again, unless Formula One has decided making any money at all, if we're willing to do this for free and build you a new $10 million course, and I don't know how you fit a big enough track in that footprint.
Yeah, it's a very small footprint. The garages they need.
Yeah, they're better off just going to a new venue in Los Angeles if they feel it's important to be out there.
So I agree.
I just don't put that. You know, I'm always worried because we worry about things until the deal is signed, but I just don't see any chance of that being feasible at this point. And then the other rumor that was out there on TSO that was interesting, on Trackside Online, that Bernie Ecclestone wants to buy Force India and return the Brabham name. He used to own that team to Formula One, with Matty Brabham involved. So Jeff Brabham was asked about that, and he said, boy, first I've heard of that, but that'd be great. We'd be all for that. So
good stuff.
We shall see what happens. All right. I know you have places to get to with your busy schedule, so we will see you tomorrow night at the Burger Bash. Coming up in just a moment, we'll tell you some other things that are happening today, try to get to a couple of tweets, and we're going to revisit some of the fantastic finishes from the Indy Lights race here, the Freedom 100, which is coming up tomorrow at 12:30 on NBCSN. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Cavan and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Karam and Munoz nearly touch. On the outside of four, remaining three wide, Gabby Chavez. We're going to have a three wide shootout at the line. It's a drag race.
Who's got the momentum?
Here comes Dempsey. Dempsey's putting a four wide. It's going to be. Dempsey won it.
That was a four-wide finish in Indy Lights.
Unbelievable. Matthew Brabham trying to hold off. One more corner to go. Gabby Chavez has a run. He lost by 6 inches last year. Chavez to the outside. Side by side at the line. It is Gabby Chavez wins the Freedom 100 in Indianapolis by about a foot. 2 years in a row here. Turn three, two corners to go. Get your cameras ready for another photo finish at Indy Lights. Ed Jones on the inside, Stoneman to the outside, back on the main straightaway. A drag race to the finish at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Side by side at the finish. Dean Stoneman has won the Freedom 100. 0.002 two-thousandths of a second. Thanks for staying with us. Trackside continues on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. Some of the highlights of the exhilarating Freedom 100s. That's three of the last 4 years where it's essentially been a photo finish. Might we see it again tomorrow? Hope you can join us either here in person for Carb Day, or I really hope you'll watch or DVR the broadcast on NBCSN live as part of our Carb Day coverage starting at 11 a.m. and it goes all day. And the guy that's going to be starting second in that race joins us now, Colton Herta, already a two-time winner in his maiden season at 16 and now 17 years old. So what do you make of this experience on the 2.5-mile oval here?
Oh, it's awesome. And qualifying is always the most fun us as drivers have because we're going the quickest and we're the most trimmed out and it's the most exciting. But yeah, I'm happy with P2. I had a little bit of an incident coming out of the pits and I did a half spin to the inside of the track. And I actually took the pit exit out, which I think cost me quite a bit of time. So I'm really happy with P2. Obviously, qualifying is not super important here because you can race from anywhere you start. But yeah, I'm happy the car is fast and see what we can do tomorrow.
How are you feeling about that just tiny bit of drizzle during your qualifying run? Did you notice that?
I did. I definitely noticed that. I don't know if that had something to do with me going off or it's just a lack of skill by me, but I noticed it. I don't know how much of a role it played when I started getting going, but I definitely noticed it.
What's your oval experience coming into this weekend?
Not much. I think I did one race in USF 2000 at Lucas Oil.
Okay.
Which it's an oval for that kind of car, but it's not the speed that we're running here, and so it's really completely different, so it'll take some time setting up the drafting tomorrow and getting used to the speeds.
And you did an average lap on Monday over 200 miles per hour. What is that like? I mean, think about this. That's about 15 miles? I'm trying to think what the stock cars go here. It's at least 10 miles an hour plus more than stock cars are doing here.
I wouldn't doubt that, but it was amazing, and I'm already starting to get used to it, so I'm ready to go 230.
Whoa. Did you feel like you had a pretty good handle in traffic? That's the key.
Yeah, the car's really good in traffic, so I'm excited to see what we can do tomorrow.
Did you expect to come out of the gate and do what you've been able to do this year? You know, you've got the two wins recently. It's just been bad luck. But did you think you could contend for the championship right at the start?
I obviously didn't have any doubt in my ability, but the thing is, it's getting used to a completely different environment. I'm driving for Andretti and never driven for them before, and driving in a different car in a different country that I've been racing in England for the past 2 years. So but all things considered, I'm really, really proud of the Andretti guys. I mean, they've really crafted me and made this transition easier than it really should have been.
Have you started thinking about next year? Is your goal winning the championship and doing IndyCar full-time next year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've been thinking about IndyCar ever since I started driving.
Ready to do it next year?
Yep.
That's great. It's good to talk to you. Good luck.
Thank you.
That's Colton Herta, who's going to start second tomorrow in the Freedom 100. And Mateus Laist, in his very first oval race, is going to start on the pole. Should be fun. Hope you can join us tomorrow. All right, a couple of other notes. It is confirmed now. Vice President Mike Pence confirmed on his Twitter account that he will be attending the Indianapolis 500 simply as a fan. No official role involved. So as far as I know, we haven't heard who a pace car driver will be at this point, so we'll wait on that. Aaron McMillan asks on Twitter, the prediction we all want to hear is if it will rain or not on Sunday. I'm staying out of that one. I'm hoping that we are dry for tomorrow. I'd like to see the parade be dry and some other things on Saturday and then get a good race day going as well, but we shall see. Jeremiah Morrell says, Mikhail Ocean 60-1 in the star to win after what he did at Pocono last year? Total steal, hashtag moose. Yeah, Mikhail is one of those guys that I didn't list, but he's going to try to go to the front. We know he's fearless and he's fast, so somebody definitely to watch. Epic Bourbon asks, where does Alonso rank all-time for rookie talents? Well, we shall see. I don't think you can say we need to see what he does in the race. He's been great so far, but his final exam is coming up on Sunday. And Mike Stoops asks, will the 18 aero kit eliminate flat out racing on ovals, i.e. drivers have to lift in the turns, which is what they want? I'm not sure that anything's going to change on that front. We'll see. I would think that would take more horsepower for that to happen. And Stephen V. King asks if there any thought to keeping the current aero kits for Indy in 2018 if testing doesn't produce same better racing. My guess would be no. My guess is they do enough testing. They want to get this right. They've spent a lot of time and effort on the look of the car, so they're next going to need to figure out to make it racy. And they should be able to. With a similar body kit for both Chevy and Honda, they should be able to make the adjustments to make it race very well again. All right, out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Hang on to your phone calls because it's another email edition, and you might enjoy the background coming up in just a moment on the Talk of Gasoline Alley. So we've already gone through and received all the emails that can fit into tonight's show. Join us tomorrow night, Pan Am Plaza, for the Carb Night Burger Bash presented by Steak and Shake. Thanks to David Deering for putting everything together tonight. For Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Thank you so much for joining us on Trackside on 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan.